Hello and welcome to the Industry Leaders Podcast, where we talk to the leaders of some of the most exciting retail and direct brands and learn the real stories behind their success, their challenges, and their plans for the future. I'm Sarah Cole Boyle, and this podcast is brought to you by More2, the marketing science people. Now, I have something a little bit different for you this episode. I'm joined today by Alison Hutchinson, CEO of registered charities Pennies. Alison, I think it's fair to say, has business in her blood. She comes from an entrepreneurial family and has led senior teams at IBM, Barclays Bank, and many, many others. Today, though, she is CEO of Pennies, which is the digital charity box she set up in 2009. In a nutshell, and I'm sure Alison will give us more detail, but it is basically a way for consumers to simply and safely donate pennies digitally in stores, in restaurants, online, and also on smart devices. So it's essentially, it's a new channel for an old habit, and it's bringing micro donations into the digital age. So Alison, listen, it is brilliant to have you here. How are you doing?
Very well, and thank you very much for having me.
No, I'm delighted to have you because we've never actually had anything like Pennies on the podcast before. So I think people would be really interested, and I'm really interested, you know, kind of to hear why you set it up, what you do and all that kind of thing. But maybe just to give us a little bit of background, what did the early years of your career look like?
Well, that's an interesting question. It depends how early you want to go back to. Because I guess if I go early, you know, my upbringing was very much in a fantastic family, but a very much a working class environment where my mum and dad were amazing entrepreneurs, and we had lots of local family businesses, things like bed and breakfast, dry cleaner shops, electrical contractors. And so from the minute I knew I could walk, talk, contribute, we were part of what was called Charlie's Angels. My dad was called Charlie. So there was my mum, my sister and I, and we did whatever we had to do. And it taught me from a really young age, kind of some really interesting business models. And I hold to the day really what my mum and dad taught me, which it might seem a bit simplistic, but it was all about make sure the customers are king, attract and look after the best people you can, make more money than you spend, and give back to the community you're serving. And I think for me, I look fast forward to my career now, and actually that's what's held me in good stead. So that's my really early parts. But if you really want my career after that, I was fortunate to go to university and then started my career in Newcastle as a systems engineer at IBM, and had the very fortunate opportunity to really be part of a graduate recruitment at IBM that took me everything through developing code, selling, marketing, international activities. I ran a couple of global business units for them. For example, the global e-commerce business for financial services during the dot-com boom. When I left IBM after about 14, 15 years, I joined Barclays, where I ran a subsidiary of Barclays, which was a joint venture with Accenture, which was really my first CEO role. After a couple of years, I went on to be marketing director at Barticard, then spent some time with Kensington Mortgages Group, which was a PLC that I was put on the board to help turn around. And in fact, we delisted that just before the financial crisis. And then you fast forward to now, where I have the real privilege and probably one of the best opportunities of anybody, because I run and have led and founded this amazing charity. And I also sit in the board of three other companies as a non-executive director. So that's me. Probably too much, but that's me.
No, but you know, it's funny what you say. Like, it is a simple way, I think, like you were saying about your family business, you know, between, you know, the customer being is king, you know, keeping your cash flow going, hiring good people, building good teams and giving back. I mean, that's the distillation of a good business course. You know, people go to university for 4 years to learn that. It is a simple rule of thumb. And I think sometimes, you know, you can kind of overcomplicate things, and obviously business is complex. But I think once you keep those kind of core pillars, you're not going to go too far wrong. You know, as long as you're doing all of them kind of okay, you would be
fine. Exactly. Exactly. And it's, you know, it's even interesting things like risk management, which is obviously so important to business. And I'm sure this was just my memory and totally wrong, but I remember when I was of an age, you know, like my dad would take all the electrical contracting and you'd have a socket that was priced at, say, 25p in the day, I can't remember, and cable that was priced. And I used to have to do the arithmetic and then add it all up. And I remember, I'm sure it's not true, Dad saying, well, you better get it right, because if it's wrong, that'll cost us. So my understanding of risk management and making sure all my arithmetic was right was from a very young age. Of course, I'm sure he did check it. But it's things like that that I feel my parents gifted me with, just the practical reality of running businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think my dad is self-employed as well. And he was, you know, running corporate events up until the financial crash, which obviously when you're living in Ireland in 2008 and your main clients are the banks, that's not a good place to be, you know. So as quite a young age, you understand, oh gosh, actually cash flow is really important, you know, and it's kind of that fundamental thing. And I think it's helpful, you know, if you have kids and you're running a business, you know, to be really open with them about whether it's just, you know, okay, the next couple of months are quite lean and we don't have, you know, this kind of money, but, you know, we will get through it. And, you know, this is what we're going to do. I think it's really healthy for kids, I think. And also it really teaches you very important lessons for young, very young.
I think that's right. And I'm sure your dad has found a new path going forward. Yeah. That's the thing.
It's all
the way, don't they? Because they just keep reinventing themselves. So fantastic. Yeah. But I think you're right. And one of my personal passions is I'm just not sure we spend enough time helping people understand money, you know, what debt is, what a mortgage is, where you invest, how you save. It's such an important skill, and particularly going into the current really challenging economic times where people are finding it much tighter on their wallets. It's so important that people know and understand money. Yeah. I just don't think it's in our education enough. I don't think people talk about it enough. And then it becomes, oh, well, maybe I should know, when actually, if you've never taught or had the experience, how can you?
Yeah.
So there's so much more I think we need to do to help people in that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Could you tell me a little bit about Pennies? What, you know, in more detail than I was able to give, what is the charity? What do you do and who do you work with?
Thank you. I thought you did do a very good job, actually.
Well, thank you.
Don't put yourself down. I mean, listen, it's right. The most popular way of giving is dropping coins in a charity box because it's easy, it's affordable. Nobody asks you, and you just do it if you want to do it because you feel good. You've just bought something, you've got a few coins, you think, ah, they'd be better off actually going to charity. And way back when we founded Pennies, we just spotted the trend that we were starting to go cashless. Contactless was in its early stages. E-commerce was in a boom. And so our vision was, how do we protect and grow those little micro donations by making it easy and affordable for everybody to give, regardless of the channel? So that's where kind of Pennies came from. And our vision is that these pennies really add up to making a huge difference. And we can talk about that later. But that's what we're trying to do, is really democratize giving so that everybody that wants to can, but they do it if it's their choice. And it just makes people feel good. So in order to do Pennies, we've created, sounds like a grand word, but a little ecosystem, because we can't do this ourselves. So we work with the payment and technology industry to embed Pennies as a standard feature, so it's available to retailers. And I use retailers with a small r, because that can be football clubs, it can be hospitality, you know, it's completely that broad spectrum of people that are buying and selling to consumers is really what I mean. But by embedding the technology and having lots of APIs and plugins, it makes it relatively easy for retailers to join in. And we work with retailers to help them unlock Pennies. They nominate the charity or charities they want to support, whether that be a tiny local one, a regional, or one of our national favourites. And then the rest is quite simple. And as soon as we enable Pennies, you know, we've just found there's never been a retailer switch on where there's not an immediate consumer response. Mm. You know, I go right back to our first partner in Domino's Pizza, who were really keen to help trial it with us for 3 months. And this was 12 years ago. We knew it was going to be enabled in the platform at the quietest time at 10 o'clock in the morning. And I was sitting there and I remember wondering who ordered pizzas at 10 o'clock. But now I've got 20-something-year-old children. I know exactly who ordered. But we were ready with our order. And literally, we knew it was coming and we clicked to be first to donate. And I think we were the fourth donation. And that kind of meant we knew from an early, early stage we were onto something where intuitively, having never been seen in the UK, you got consumers saying, why wouldn't I click and round up my order when I'm ordering Domino's and give it to charity? I guess the other thing I would say is we work very closely with the charities because storytelling is so, so important. And I'm sure we'll come back to a few examples there. But these charities do amazing work in the UK. And yes, we're a charity, but we're here to be really delivering for all of the frontline charities in the UK. And that's a very humbling place to be, really.
Mm, yeah, of course. And you must come across some very inspiring stories with the people that you talk to. Could you maybe tell us a couple that stay with you or stand out to you?
Oh, there are so many inspiring stories. It's quite often heartbreaking, and I can feel myself, you know, when you're involved, I'm not sure I could pick out one or two. I mean, you see kids with severe disability that just can't get out of bed themselves, that maybe don't have the support they need, and yet they get some resources that might just be an hour of help that goes in helping them, and it transformed their family's life, theirs life. You sit and talk to families who are kids having a traumatic time, say at Great Ormond Street, who couldn't afford to stay next to their own child. I can't imagine having my child in that and having to be remote, whereas some of the funds mean that they can stay next door to their kid, they can be there for them. You know, these stories seem kind of ordinary when you're putting somebody up in a room, but you're giving them the gift of being close to their loved ones. And every story you hear, you know, parents who find their children having real mental health issues, if you've ever been close to someone that's lost somebody, that's decided to get to that dark space of having to take their life because they feel there's no other way through, and you just speak to the trauma that's left behind with their families and the ifs and so's and buts and whatevers, the work these charities do across a spectrum of activity, and I haven't even mentioned the word cancer and heart and all those kind of health issues, it genuinely reminds you why you're so lucky in life and why every morning, however challenging, get up and put a smile on your face and just remember how lucky you are to be able to crack on and do something. And for me, that's the inspiration I get every single day.
Could you tell me, you know, where do you want to bring Pennies? In your kind of best case scenario, what would you like to see Pennies doing in the next couple of years?
Oh, my dream is what you're asking.
Yes.
Well, let me dream for a bit and put some context. You know, if every UK adult that was banked in the UK could give equivalent of a chocolate truffle, or do you remember those old chocolate Fredo bars?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if we all gave equivalent of a chocolate Fredo bar just once a week, that would be £1 billion of additional money for the UK charity sector. And so for me, people question, is that little bit helpful? Yes, it is. Every penny helps. And together, they could be incredibly meaningful. So that's why for me, yes, we've smashed through £40 million at the end of this year from 160 million consumer donations. But we're only at the foothills of what we can possibly do to help the UK charity sector. And I'll do everything I can and get the support, hopefully from as many people, to really march towards that amazing amount. But yeah, the charity sector needs huge support. And I think together we can make a big difference.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Well, I'm very excited to see the next milestone that you hit, the milestone you hit after that, because I think there's so much potential. And, you know, people really do want to give. They just want a channel that's available to them. And that's what you're getting. So it's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And can you tell me, maybe with Pennies, well, what happens is if you have a transaction and it's say it's £17, 27 cents or pence, you round up to the nearest pound. Is that how it works?
Basically, yes. The retailer actually has a number of choices. The consumer doesn't see this, so I'll explain the consumer in a minute. But the retailer can choose, do they want to round up to the nearest 10 pence, 50 pence, a pound? Might they want a standard top-up of 5 pence or 25 pence? So the retailer has an ability to also say if it's below 10 pounds, maybe don't prompt anything. So there's so many opportunities. But from a consumer point of view at checkout, whether that be online or in store or in an app, they just see, would you like to donate 12p to support Macmillan Cancer? And they see it's powered by Pennies. And if you want to donate, you click, you tap. If you do nothing, it disappears. So it's always, always a customer choice to opt in if that's what they want to do.
Okay, yeah, brilliant. And, you know, it's something that I've really noticed in the past, I suppose, maybe 6 or 7 months on this podcast, talking to business leaders, you know, as they're kind of coming out of the shock of COVID and the shock of the war in Ukraine and supply chain, you know, and they're kind of, obviously, we're going into, you know, challenging economic situation. But as, you know, those kind of big global shocks are kind of people are getting to grips with or kind of settling with, really social purpose is really something that people are thinking so much about. And it's something that's, you know, was always there, but I think is kind of coming to the forefront. And brands are really trying to, you know, think how they can act meaningfully and think meaningfully. So why do you think it is that Pennies in particular resonates with brands and with consumers so much?
It's a really good question, and I totally agree with your observation. I think social purpose has always been there. You know, everybody knows someone that's needed help from a charity. So everybody that's basically good in their heart wants to give back to help. And I think the reason pennies resonates, and particularly at the moment, is because it's such a small amount of money. So you're not asking for a big long-term commitment. You're actually giving people the choice, so they feel in control, to give just a little bit. But that adds up to making a huge difference. And when we speak to consumers, they'll say, if I knew who the charity was, I'd give. If I knew what it meant, I'd give. Well, Pennies does all of that. It transparently tells you really simply who the charity is. And working with the retailer and the charity, we package up the stories and people just are blown away at how quickly Pennies add up. You know, at Domino's, who I mentioned earlier, every 10 minutes, their customers' pennies funds an hour of care for a teenager fighting cancer. That's every 10 minutes. So why does Pennies resonate? Well, if I could afford to buy a pizza, I can afford a few pence to round up. And from Domino's point of view, they're part of creating a community of customers with a sense of loyalty that together they've got a much bigger role in life. And so I think it really works for the consumer, but it really works for the brand. And we've never had a major retailer that's ever switched off that's joined the Pennies movement, which over 12 years. And it's not just customers. I can't tell you how much colleagues love being part of Pennies because they don't ask the customer. It's all automated. So it's not that they have to be doing the ask, but they get a sense of pride that the brands they're working for give a chance to give back. And we bring scale to the giving they could do themselves. But they'll volunteer their time, they'll do their own bit. But actually joining in with customers, it brings huge scale. And so I think it's just one of those things that some people say, well, what's the catch? Well, I genuinely don't believe there is a catch, you know, because it's all about choice. It's all about making it easy for people. And I think with busy lives and busy people and busy businesses trying to fight all the real challenging times they have, if you give them a relatively easy thing to do that actually just resonates and makes sense, most people just want to do it. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you're so right in making it a choice. You know, there's no obligation or there's no, you know, because there's sometimes, you know, when you see some businesses, restaurants or cafes, and they ask you for a tip or they kind of automatically assume a 10% tip. And consumers kind of kick back against that and they don't like it. But when it is completely choice-based, it really is brilliant. And how do you see ESG strategies like Pennies? How do you see that developing the next 5 or 10 years? Because it is somewhere that's kind of really changed hugely digitally, especially in the past couple of years. So I'm interested to see where you think I might go in the future.
Oh, it's a really interesting question. And if I had the answer to that, I'd make a lot of money for charity. I'd give back from that. But no, I think it is evolving. Look, you've got to split E, S and G, I think, because E in terms of environment and climate change. And there's no doubt, I think we're going to see technology and governments having to intervene if we're really going to try and get to a proper position on net zero over time, because it's not going to be a choice. We have to. We can't keep letting the temperature of the world keep going up. We're going to have, and that's not, we can all do our bit, but there's some big step changes that need to happen. You know, for example, a lot of these big, large delivery trucks, there's no technology yet that enables you to deliver big items to people's homes. And so we're going to have to get science and business and technology working together to address that. Equally, I think, you know, not many people know, but right now there's a COP going on in Montreal to do with biodiversity. That's a topic which is also really, really important for our nature and for our livelihood, but it doesn't get the same level of focus maybe as carbon footprint does. And I think over the next 10 years, you'll see that increase where a lot more people will be aware of that biodiversity, what it means to them. So I think on that side, it's here. On the S side, where you're looking at colleagues, customers, communities, I just think we could do a lot more technology and volunteering. I know there's some schemes out there and some technologies that make it easy, but actually, it's quite hard to volunteer.
It actually is. Do you know what? Yeah, my mum has kind of gone on this thing of volunteering the past years. It's really hard.
It is. And yeah. So you've got these people that want to give time. And yes, you need DBS checks for certain activities. And that's all important. But I'd have this image, if it's easy and affordable to give pennies, how can we make it easy and affordable for people to give their time? I think that's a really untapped opportunity at the moment, where more and more people, I've got an hour here. What could I go and do? If you could go and go, right, okay, what could I do right away? I can go and help with that food bank. And it's not quite as accessible as it needs to be. So I think there's a big step change. And money's one thing, but energy of human beings is another. And, you know, when you see some of the volunteering work and some of the people that work in the front end of charities, it's remarkable how inspirational they can all be. So that, again, is where I think technology has a bigger role to play, and there's more we need to do there. Mm-hmm. But at Pennies, we haven't scratched the surface. So I think we're at the beginning of our journey, and we need to do a lot more to get the word out, to make the technology easier and easier and easier, and to help give consumers the chance to play their part.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, we're recording this at the start of December, mid-December, and there is so much conversation around Black Friday, whether it's moral to do it and how customers, you know, respond to it. And obviously, it's very important for retailers and everything. But what is less known about, I think, is Giving Tuesday. Have you seen any kind of uptick in Giving Tuesday over the past couple of years? Or do people know about it? Or how are they responding to it?
It's a really good question, and I don't think it is well known. I mean, I think you get Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Giving Tuesday. And actually, Giving Tuesday was launched in the States 10 years ago. So It's still relatively new. And I think it's beginning to get a bit of traction. And certainly we found, I think it was about 11 of our merchants all looked to promote what they were doing with Pennies as part of Giving Tuesday. Quite a few of them matched the donations for the day or the week to try and bring a level of sense. There was a lot of storytelling to remind people how quickly Pennies add up and the impact. And when I look at the stats from last week, I think all of our merchants were up on Tuesday relative to the Tuesday before. Right. Now you could say that's part of the festive season, and we can't quite tell at this stage yet how much of it is from the festive season and increased buying. But there's definitely been an increase. And we know from the research we do, if you have match giving, if you storytell about the impact, you are going to get people increasing. But I think the important thing for me is that we just start to get far broader awareness. So the more companies get involved, like they've done with Pennies and like they do outside with loads of things that people do, I think the more people will feel good about the importance of giving back. And I know I keep saying feel good, but there's so many things to not feel good about at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
We need to remember it. Yes, as I say, get up in the morning and smile if you've got the ability to go out and do whatever you do or to talk to whoever you need to talk to. But actually, if we can give a little time or a little money and feel part of that community, I think it's really good.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, it is sometimes hard to feel that you can actually do anything or affect any change, you know, when it's kind of big stories that you kind of feel you've no control over. I heard a lady speak a few weeks ago, you know, talking about, you know, you don't have to make everything a big gesture. You don't have to do everything perfectly. You just do little things, little and often, and that will add up over time. And that's doable and that's achievable. And, it's not going to break the bank, you know, but like little things, that's obviously the whole basis of Pennies. But I think you're spot on in making things a habit and making things easy for people. It's really, really effective.
And I always say it's one step at a time. I always think, let's remember little children that are little babies that turn into toddlers. What do they do? They take one step and then they take two and then they're suddenly off walking and then they're jogging and then they're running. And then, you know, let's break it down and make it easeable and digestible rather than scaring people with too big an issue.
Yeah, spot on. You touched briefly on volunteering a little while ago, and I'd kind of love to hear your approach to leadership, because I know it's something that you've spoken about before. I read a really interesting quote that you said a couple of years ago. It's that effective leadership means being visible and ruthless in decision-making, but compassionate in the execution. I'd love you to explain a little bit about that, how you came to that kind of philosophy and how you live it.
Oh, very good question. It's amazing when you say things, then you think, what?
Yeah.
Did I say that? Well, I think I probably would, because first of all, I think it's so important that leaders are visible. And by visible, I mean physically, digitally, out speaking with colleagues. You don't hide behind your desk. Mm-hmm. If you're leading any business or any team, there's no excuse to not be hugely visible. And that means, importantly, when you're going through tough times, unless when you're going through good times. So it's, don't just be the leader that's out when you can go, isn't it wonderful? Great. Yes. Be there when people are going, I'm worried about, have you seen this? We've got this issue. And also visibility is transparency. You can't always share everything as a leader, but I think sharing is really, really important. And therefore that visibility of, you know, having some difficult conversations sometimes. And I just think sometimes it's easy to kind of go, oh, people won't understand, I'm not ready to talk. But the more when leaders are ready to engage in conversations, the more people will understand, the more businesses are successful. And I think one of the big things you do as a leader, yes, is set strategy, inspire your colleagues, but you've got to make the decisions because the buck stops with you. And so for me, one of the things I've learned is you've got to surround yourself by amazing people, take on board their feedback, but ultimately you've got to make the shouts. And if you put off making the shouts, that's not a good thing. If you do it too quickly without having done the homework, that's not a good thing. So you've got to make the shouts, but don't make a shout and then not do the full thing. So maybe you've decided, right, okay, unfortunately, we've got to shut some shops because they're not performing. I think we can get away with two. If you actually think it should be 10, make it 10. You'll be bold, be ruthless in that decision. But then the way you execute it, the way you tell people has got to be full of compassion. Because, you know, if you then go to say, right, we're shutting 10 shops, it's like, what? Whereas if you say, look, here's the challenges. This is where we're going. We're going to speak to our colleagues. If you're really compassionate and think if it was you, how do you best want to make sure you show emotion, you show humility, and you really communicate and engage in a very compassionate way, then I think if leaders can balance that ruthlessness in decision-making, taking on board the feedback you need from the people around you, and then execute with compassion, normally, if people understand the outcome, they might not like it for themselves, but they're going to go and follow that journey. So that was my background to why I kind of coined that little phrase.
Yeah, I think Elon Musk could learn a few things from you, Alison.
I'm not sure he'd pick up my call.
I don't know. You never know. He might be listening to this podcast. yeah, and there's a lot of wisdom there. There is a lot of wisdom there. And I think that is something that will be useful to people, you know, kind of in the next couple of months or next few years. I wonder if you had one or two pieces of advice to give to a brand or a retailer, whether it's a CEO, a director, investor, what would you say to people as they're kind of looking at maybe needing to batten down the hatches a little bit for the next couple of months?
I guess I'd say ruthless in decision-making. Yeah. Execution, because I think that is what people are going to have to do. But I think more broadly, you know, resilience is really important and people have got to be resilient and leaders have got to be resilient to help their companies be resilient. And that's not an easy thing to be when you've had months and months, it feels at the moment, of one thing after another. And that overused word, but very necessary word of unprecedented, you know, it's really tough. And so I think my real guidance is people have got to work out what will it take for them to be resilient, because that's not just always about working every minute of every day. There's a phrase I used to use, and it was actually when I was a working mum, about it's about energy management, not time management. So although I worked full time when my children were growing up, if I was on the side of a hockey pitch, I wasn't on my phone, I was on the side of the hockey pitch. And as a leader, there's so many people that need you to show up for them. But if you're tired at the end of the day and you don't show up for that meeting at 5 o'clock like you would at 9 o'clock, that's not okay. That's really not okay, because that's your problem. Because the person that's coming to see you at 5 is as important as a person that was coming to see you at 9. So if you're trying to be resilient, you've got to work out for you as a human being, how do you be the best form of yourself? And how do you be really thoughtful about your energy management? And if you're not ready to show up, be really, really thoughtful as well to when you can. And that's as much at home as it is at work, because at the end of the day, it's our loved ones that help us fly. And so that energy management for me, that you need to pace yourself, you know, it's easy to say, but life's a marathon, not a sprint. And at the moment, it feels like we're doing sprint runs all the time and we just can't keep going unless you're one of these brilliant sprinters. But you know, in general, you've got to manage that pace and rhythm. And I think when it comes to businesses and to people, more than ever, you just got to really be that visible individual, because communicate. It's easily said and people think they have communicated, and you've got to work out communicating what people need, not necessarily what they want, because that again is really important. If you put yourself in somebody else's shoes and hear and see what they are feeling and thinking, then you work out what they need. Your job is to help fulfill it, because at the end of the day, as a leader, you're there to serve everybody that works for you. They're not there to serve you. And so I think remembering the reversing of that triangle and having a bit of humility when you do that is so important. And you'll get it back in rewards, because people love working with and for people that they respect and feel that care. So I just think caring is, we must never forget, we're all human.
Yeah, absolutely. And that actually what you said there at the end really, really resonates with me, because remembering that people aren't there to serve you, but you're there to help them to succeed. You know, I think of all the places I've worked, so people where the leaders were really, really open and really kind of looking for feedback and input from even like the entry level people. You know, those are the businesses that are the nicest to work for and not generally tend to be the most successful as well. So yeah, I completely agree. I'd also like to hear a little bit about your approach to building teams as well. You know, how you build, how you manage your teams, how you identify skill, you know, gaps that you need to fill. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yes, well, I mean, I'm sure there's many better leaders than me in terms of building and managing teams, but it comes back to really kind of where I started in life as a kid. You know, I think you've got to be really clear in your strategy and where you're trying to get to, and then work really hard to see if that's your end goal, what are the capabilities you'll need, not now, but to deliver that? And, you know, and sometimes in people management, it's easy to always keep with people that you know that helps you rather than the people you really need going forward. And I think it's easy to get a bit too comfortable with the same. And we're all guilty of that. And that's brilliant. But you also need to keep iterating. And sometimes, you know, I was with a forum recently of senior leaders, actually, and they were talking about the difficulty of tech companies at the moment that are having to make some big tech changes and redundancies that a lot of these tech firms just haven't had to do before. Mm. There was a big debate about how difficult that is and how you manage it. And actually, one of the, you know, I kind of said, but actually, why don't we make the changes when it's going well? Rather than when it's not. You know, as a leader, it's easy to make team changes, or it's not easy, it's hard, very hard to make changes, but it's driven when things aren't working as well, rather than when things are working really well, right? Where next? What's the skill gap? Where do I go? So I think in building teams, you need that balance of where are you going? Try and be really clear, try and be really articulate. Then you look at getting a real breadth and diversity of talent around you, and that's skills, backgrounds, interests. And that's not just because we're all talking about inclusivity and diversity. It's because that's how you form great teams. And that's how you get differences of opinion. And there's different ways of looking at whether you're a yellow, a green, a red, or a blue, or, you know, there's so many different tools out there. But genuinely seeking for that diversity is so important. And then being able to inspire. Because if you're not passionate about what you do, if you don't believe in what you're doing, it's only ever going to be a job. And I don't know how you build teams if you're just doing a job. I mean, you may be able to do that. But from my perspective, you've got to believe in the brands that you're working for and with. You've got to believe in that strategy. And you've got to believe in the people that you've been successful to attract to deliver on that mission. And you've got to listen, as my dad would say, with two ears and one mouth, or you're never, ever going to survive. And so that really listening, not hearing, but listening, I think people respond to. And being clear with people, if they're not performing, you have to tell them. And if they are, tell them too. You know, it's that balance. So I don't know, but that's kind of how I go about thinking about building a team and continually thanking them for the little things. It's not just the big bits, it's the little things that happen every day that you try and spot, and just make sure you get a little bit of awareness to it, because, you know, I think it helps.
Yeah, and everyone is human at the end of the day. Everyone wants to be seen and heard and, you know, feel like they're contributing. So yeah, all of those things are very, very human. Just before we wrap up, Alison, if a brand or a retailer or restaurant or whoever it is wants to partner with Pennies, how do they go about it?
Well, first of all, look us up and contact us online. Obviously, we're at pennies.org.uk. But there's really just four simple things. One is we help them qualify their technology. You know, if they're in e-com, are they on Shopify or Magento or Salesforce, or, you know, what's your platform? Because we probably get an easy plug and play API that helps do it. So one is let's qualify the technology and the ease to deploy. Secondly, tell us who the charity is that you want to support so that we can make sure we do the due diligence and speak and onboard the charity. We've got a few agreements in place that make it easy for them because, you know, they're collecting the funds on behalf of the charity sector. And then we work in communications for colleagues, for customers, make sure it's clear at point of sale, make sure we have the storytelling I was talking about. And it's really as easy as that. So yeah, get in touch. We'll look at the tech. We'll understand your charity. We'll get a few agreements in place. And then we'll get a comms plan that makes everybody feel good about this little humble penny that goes to work with all its friends in the charity sector. Because right now, you know, just to bring a bit of reality and clarity, there was some research recently that says already one in four people have reduced what they're giving to charity. And we've got a charity sector that has got demands that outstrip supply. And all these charities have the same challenge that businesses have. And, you know, even just to stand still, if you take the rate of inflation this year, the average charity will have to raise an additional £75,000 just to stand still, just in their reserves. So you've got a fantastically talented sector there that is really wanting to help, but really needs all the help it can get. So genuinely, I know I lead on pennies. There's loads of ways you can give: time, money, energy, passion. But if an organisation wants to get involved, I can tell you the sector really will say a huge thank you. And you and your leadership team and your colleagues and your shareholders will feel so much better about what you're doing. So I'd love you to get in touch and I'd love to help them.
Brilliant. Well, that was inspiring, Alison. Thank you so much. I've no doubt, but people will be getting in touch because, like you said, you know, everyone has something to give, you know, and you're channeling it and you're sending it out into the world, into the places that need it and the people who need it most. So yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for having me. One of my advisors said, the biggest problem is you're one of the best kept secrets. So thank you very much for helping me share our secret, because it shouldn't be a secret. And if there's anybody that's got any ideas or thoughts, get in touch. We're always open to listening and learning. So yeah, feel free to let me know if you think there's more we can do. And thank you very much for talking to me today.
Oh, it was my absolute pleasure. My real pleasure. Thank you so much, Alison. And yeah, take care.
Take care.
That was Alison Hutchinson, CEO of the charity Pennies. And if you want to partner with Pennies, you want to learn more about them, do just check them out at pennies.org.uk. That's it for this week. So from me, Sarah Boyle, and all of us at More2, take care and bye-bye.